I just love seeing you all come in like this.
He's talking about the new refiners joining the Severed Patreon page. Just $5 a month and no cranial drill required. Go to patreon.com/severedpod.
Okay, you're all set.
Severed, the ultimate severance podcast.
So glad to see you've returned, refiners. We're just hanging out here on the severed floor, hoping to get some new files from upstairs. Unfortunately, things like writer and actor strikes are keeping those files from appearing. By the way, this is Severed, the ultimate severance podcast. I'm your host, Alan S. Since we don't have any new episodes to dissect, we've been distracting ourselves by taking a look at those things that fueled the creation of Severance. I call it the Severed Origins series. We've covered the Philip K. Dick novella and movie Paycheck. We've also taken a more than four-hour, three-part look at the Terry Gilliam movie Brazil. This time out, I thought we'd lighten things up a bit. There is a long-form corporate promotional video out there which influenced Dan Erickson when it came to crafting the message of Severance. It's a 4-minute and 30-second video produced for the steakhouse chain Sizzler back in 1991. Dan has mentioned it several times in interviews. He's discussed it at length with Anne Helen Peterson in her culture study interview and in his talk with Thrillist. I, of course, had to check out this video. So if you're ready, refiners, let's open the short and deliriously happy file marked Sizzler. Full disclosure, refiners, in 1991, I was working for a regional Midwestern advertising agency. I was an account executive and accounts manager. We weren't a huge shop, so I was also heavily involved with creative development. I've both written and directed long-form videos just like this one. I never did one for a restaurant chain, but I distinctly remember writing and producing short-form corporate promo videos for a seed corn company, a regional coal mining group, and a manufacturer of industrial hydraulic presses. We would also create graphics for the clamshell box and sometimes even a companion booklet. We were into consuming as many natural resources and killing as many trees as possible back in those days. This Sizzler video Dan mentioned just happens to be a preserved relic from the era. It is by no means anything really unique. These weirdly intense exercises in corporate cheerleading were pretty common in the 1980s and 90s. Carrying VHS tapes around in a briefcase was standard for many executives of the era. Want to impress a potential investor or vendor or franchisee? Let them take a look at your cool Up With People corporate video. Go-getter execs who would carry a few spares could leave a copy for the client to peruse later. Everybody had VHS machines in their offices, so showing off your wares was not difficult. At the agency where I worked, we had our own promotional message and sizzle reel on video. I know I left dozens of those little plastic boxes with companies all over the central part of the United States. These days, you can accomplish the same thing by emailing a link to the video. How ubiquitous were those VHS tapes? When one of our video editors was getting married, instead of a traditional printed invitation, he produced a video wedding invitation. VHS tapes loaded with 5 minutes of tape were sent to more than 100 invitees who all had to pop the invite into their VHS machines to know what was going on. I was curious how the not-quite-40-year-old Dan Erickson could have even run across the Sizzler video. Dan was a mere 7 years old in 1991. I'm sure he remembers VHS tapes, but I don't think he was a Sizzler investor, and I'm darn sure they weren't pitching him on opening a franchise. Digging into this part of this story revealed the freakish power and incredible size of the internet. There is so much stuff out on the internet we will never know about. Sometimes you need a guide to point out the really cool or unique goodies. To understand how Dan Erickson saw it, we need to look at the history of this video. It was produced in 1991 to be shown that year at the Sizzler corporate annual meeting. Later, it was also used at franchisee meetings to pump up existing franchisees and convert new ones. It never aired on television and was only seen by a relatively small audience of Sizzler employees and owners. In case you're not familiar with Sizzler, it's a chain of budget steakhouses. It was also a great punchline for West Coast comics of the 70s and 80s. Sizzler was founded in 1958 in Culver City, California by a couple named Dell and Helen Johnson. Originally called the Sizzler Family Steakhouse, they jumped into franchising in the 1970s and 80s. At its peak in the late 1980s, Sizzler had more than 270 locations throughout the U.S., but most of those were located in the western part of the country. Sizzler often led competitors like Ponderosa and Bonanza when it came to innovation. The idea was to provide a slightly higher quality than fast food in a restaurant setting, but at close to fast food price points. Sizzler introduced all-you-can-eat shrimp. They also pioneered the huge buffet food court, which was so expansive and offered so many options, it could be ordered as a meal on its own. Sizzler was also known for their free grilled cheese bread rolls at the start of each meal. Why cheese on the rolls? It's scientific. The cheese rolls were supposed to line the patrons' stomachs and curb their appetite before they attacked the food bar. Sizzler was riding high in the early 90s, basking in a strong stock market and Reagan-era tax cuts. It wouldn't last. Stronger competition and changes in American eating habits would prove costly to Sizzler. By 1996, they would file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. This led to the closure of 130 locations. Sizzler struggled through the early 2000s. An Australian-based investment firm bought the whole thing in 2005. In 2020, Sizzler filed for Chapter 11 again, this time due to COVID closures. Sizzler does still exist. At the time of the most recent filing, 107 Sizzlers were operating in the U.S. All but one, a Florida location, were in states west of the Rockies. But this is 1991, and Sizzler is happening. The video we're going to review debuted at the 1991 Sizzler annual meeting. It was then taken on the road as a recruitment tool for future Sizzler franchisees. One of the little girls seen in the video is Rachel Redhouse. Rachel, along with the rest of the folks featured, was hired by the video production company Multi-Image out of San Diego, California. I was curious about Multi-Image. They were founded in 1983. I tried calling a current number to see if anyone from the 1991 creative team was still on staff. Unfortunately, the number I found for Multi-Image is no longer in service, and their website URL is available for sale. Multi-Image does not seem to exist anymore. Whatever happened to them seems to have happened recently. In 1991, after producing the Sizzler video, Multi-Image sent VHS copies around to the performers. This was a common practice at the time. These days, if you're in a video production, you get a link. In 1991, you got a video in the mail. Rachel Redhouse got her very own copy of the Sizzler video, which she tossed in a box somewhere. Rachel must not have pursued an acting career. I couldn't find her listed on any of the performer directories. Rachel did happen onto that box in 2012. She found the Sizzler video she'd been in 20 years before. Rather than toss it out, Rachel thought people of the 20-teens might enjoy seeing a relic from the last century. She uploaded the video to YouTube in September of 2012. It sat there with very few hits for more than 2 years. Then in April of 2015, Dave Holmes from Esquire magazine stumbled across the Sizzler video. At the time, Dave was editor-at-large in Los Angeles for Esquire magazine. The fun of being editor-at-large meant Dave could decide to pursue whatever interested him as a story. On April 9th of 2015, he posted a story headlined, "Stop Whatever You're Doing and Watch This Absurd 1991 Sizzler Promo Video." The first line of that article said, quote, "Once in a great while, a video comes across my desk that is so utterly perfect, I have no choice but to share it with the world," unquote. And share it he did. Dave did a funny article highlighting 20 things about the Sizzler video that made him laugh. He also caused hundreds of thousands of people to check out the video. Between April 10th and 20th of 2015, you can find dozens of articles from all the major online news repackaging outlets. They basically either plagiarize or slightly rewrite Dave's original article. A few of these other sources do seem to have actually watched the video, but they don't add much new to the conversation. Dave caused Rachel's YouTube submission to go viral overnight, about 2.5 years after she posted it. Suddenly, this video and talk about this video was everywhere. On April 17th, Dave posted a follow-up article. He'd tracked down one of the guys who co-wrote the jingle and interviewed him about the big resurgence in its popularity. By the end of April 2015, the surge was over. Everyone who wanted to see the video had checked it out. The wave of internet curiosities, as it always does, rolled on. The spotlight moved to other weird little nooks and crannies. The mention from Dave on the Esquire site caused Rachel to rack up more than 2.5 million views for her submission. There are also more than 1,600 comments, almost all of which happened in 2015. This is why I need you refiners to keep promoting this podcast. One of these days, we're going to have our own Dave from Esquire moment. I'm just sure one of those 2.5 million views was a Mr. Dan Erickson of Olympia, Washington. I checked back through Dan's Twitter feed, just curious to see if he mentioned anything about it. Unfortunately, the sizzler ruckus happened in the midst of an 18-month period when Dan was quiet on Twitter. This doesn't mean he wasn't wasting his time elsewhere on the internet. I'm sure he was still out there searching for inspiration while working on his new script. We're going to break down this sizzler video. If you want to check it out first, go to the YouTube entry titled Sizzler Promotional Commercial 1991. Posted by Rachel Redhouse. It's 4.5 minutes. Otherwise, spoilers for the 1991 Sizzler video. We open on a close-up of a guy with a frisbee. The music is coming up strong, hitting hard. The sweeping chords tell us this is important. Cut to a long shot. The sun is positioned directly behind this guy, who we discover is throwing a frisbee for his dog. The dog runs out ahead. There's a heroic close-up of the dog leaping, nabbing the frisbee out of the air. Slow dissolve to a hard-working dude in a hard hat. We can tell he's working hard because he's got blueprints in front of him and girders behind. He raises his head to look into the camera as the lyrics begin. It's a little hard to hear, but they're saying, all across America, the song of freedom rings.
All across America, the song of freedom rings.
That's a pretty big opening statement. This video is about freedom. It's about America. But most of all, it's about choices. Another dissolve. Now we're looking at a young lady in a baseball cap. Dave Holmes called her young Terry Garr. It was a joke. This is not Terry Garr. Dave's joke actually turned into a trivia item on another website. Do some research, people. Terry Garr was 44 when this video was made, so I'm pretty confident this is not a young Terry Garr. I do get the reference. It looks like it could be a young Terry Garr. Man, she is also not shy about looking right down the barrel of the lens, either. This young lady is confident, no nonsense, and in your face. She also looks like somebody who knows a good value. Veteran San Diego jingle producer Stan Beard was co-writer on the Sizzler jingle. He, along with partner Roger Stradler, had their own production house called A Couple of Hitmen Music, based in San Diego. Stan and Roger not only wrote the words and music, it's Stan you hear doing the solo male voice. In Dave Holmes' interview, he mentions how people were calling the song an anthem or a hymn when it was unearthed in 2015. Stan thinks it sounds that way because it has a melody. He says there's been a move away from melody in modern music. Music in 2015 was more about atmospherics and the beat than it was about melody. Hearing a song built on three chords and a recognizable melody sounded like something from a different time. Oh, and even Stan was shocked when this thing blew up in April of 2015. He'd forgotten about it. It's work. You do it, you get paid, you move on to the next thing. He said he probably didn't give it another thought a week after it was delivered. The young Terry Garr with the baseball bat gives the camera a wry grin. This girl is wise beyond her years.
The song is growing stronger every day.
We then cut to one of the weirdest images in this weird video. It's a sea captain, and I say that with a capital S and a capital C, because this guy is a caricature. He's got a snowy white beard and mustache, all of which might be fake. A jaunty white captain's cap with scrambled eggs on the bill, just like Captain Steubing's, is jammed down almost touching some serious eyebrows. There's a fishing pole in the shot and water behind. When the camera pulls out, it looks as though this sea captain may have abducted a young girl. She doesn't look frightened, but this does look like a situation you'd want to report to the authorities.
When we listen,
to the message that it seems.
So, really, what's with the sea captain? I think it's because Sizzler had just added all-you-can-eat shrimp to their food bar. They were also including imitation crab meat in several dishes. This imitation sea captain must be there to promote these new seafood offerings in the food court.
Let us lift our voices. We can make the choices.
Cut to another dock shot. We're somewhere in a marina. Check the little girl in the hat riding her bike on the dock. This is Rachel Redhouse. She's the one who posted the video in 2012.
We will make the most of all the best that freedom brings.
Can you feel it building? We're climbing to a crescendo. Young Terry Garr has taken the bat off her shoulder and swats a pitch. She jumps up and down triumphantly in slow motion. We can feel her excitement just as
Sizzler is the one who brings us choices.
Oh yeah, cut to a whip pan of a lighted Sizzler logo. You're going to have to suppress the urge to jump to your feet, I'm sure. The camera being used to pan the sign is an early digital video camera. They had these in-camera effects, which were really just a way to exploit weaknesses in early digital video. Without smoothing on, or if you bumped up the digital gain, you'd get this very cool smear effect you see here in the quick pan. It was a dramatic in-camera effect, which I know I used way too much when we were shooting. After the logo pan, we cut to a bustling Sizzler food court. There's another high-energy pan and a zoom out using the same in-camera digital smear effect. See how cool it looks? See how easy it is to overuse? Let's do a quick diversity check. In 2023, no national advertiser would even consider doing a slice-of-life spot that didn't include a wide range of ethnic diversity. These days, you'd have a black couple, a Hispanic couple, a gay male couple, because they act as a stand-in for the entire gay community, and a few silver seniors of various ethnicities, all represented in this food court shot. Oh, but not in 1991. It's easy to see why minority groups were feeling a bit underrepresented on TV at this time. The entire food court we're seeing here is exclusively white and in their mid-30s. Check the khakis, button downs, and huge hair. This production had to have a line item for hairspray in the budget. One of the YouTube commenters in 2015 said this shoot used enough Final Net to poke a new hole in the ozone. Ah, but the food court shot is just a tease. We cut away. We're still meeting folks around the country who love choices and who are gonna love Sizzler.
Reaching out across the USA.
We're meeting caricatures and two-dimensional people. Cut to a cowboy in a striped shirt and jeans with a huge belt buckle. He's sitting on the edge of a wagon. He playfully puts his cowboy hat on his girlfriend's head. An older, but by no means elderly, couple goes jogging by. Note this woman. I have two details about her. She's getting sweaty while jogging, and she's going to be back later. Cut to a happy young couple sitting on a dock. There's a battleship in the background, and he's wearing a sailor's uniform. A very stereotypical sailor's uniform. This looks like a shot out of a 1940s World War II movie. Johnny's shipping out in the morning, but he's got one more night with his girl. He's gonna take her to Sizzler. At a minute 15, we cut back to our construction worker guy in the hard hat. He's now conferring with a woman in a business suit and hard hat. A woman on a job site? In a hard hat? There's your early 90s nod to diversity. We watch them discuss blueprints as the voiceover begins.
All over America, a quiet revolution has been taking place.
Ooh, I wonder what we're revolting against.
More and more, both parents are working and raising families.
Okay, sure, we're all overworked bad parents. No argument there.
Life seems to be moving faster than ever.
How fast? So fast, you might need a portable phone so you can have a conversation in a parking lot. Oh, baby, do not miss this incredible shot. The dude walking behind the Mercedes in the suit is talking on one of the earliest handheld mobile phones ever produced. I had one of these things. Sure, we laugh about it now, but at the time, this was the height of cool. This phone is an enormous, heavy slab. It came with its own purse so you could carry it. They were like a brick of Velveeta cheese with an antenna. The huge body of the phone was almost all battery, and it was a really lousy battery, too. If you were lucky, you could get about 20 minutes of talk time or 4 to 6 hours of standby on a single charge. If you were mugged, this phone made a great weapon. Hold on, diversity alert! We cut to a shot on a merry-go-round. An African-American father is smiling behind his daughter, who is riding one of the carousel ponies. So they're in the spot, but notice they're not in the restaurant. The voiceover tells us we Americans want quality.
In their personal life, in their business life, in the goods they purchase, and in the food they eat.
Yeah, we're a real discerning bunch. Cut to a couple of girls laughing as they try on hats over huge 90s hair. Cut to a cute, smiling, blonde sizzler waitress coming to the table. She's got a plate full of delicious-looking food. Close up on a plate, a good-looking cut of steak is set alongside a loaded baked potato.
They want good, basic home cooking, quality food, and they want choices, variety.
Check the shrimp sizzling in drawn butter. The voiceover tells us we want this all at a reasonable price.
Americans want value.
We're then thrown back to the jingle.
Sizzler brings the choices that you've been looking for.
Are you loving the soloist? That would be Stan Beard. He's the lead male voice on all the solos. Another diversity shot. An African-American woman with short black hair is at the buffet. But only for a few seconds. She quickly steps out of the shot to reveal two white women standing behind her. Okay, so they're getting in some diversity, just not too much.
By holding to traditions, yet changing with the time.
Holding to traditions might explain this lack of diversity. Cut to the most animated dad on the West Coast. He's blonde-haired and making over-the-top yummy faces as he bites into a burger. It looks like he might be playing Rachel Redhouse's dad. We then cut to one of the most highlighted scenes in the video. The shot starts on an ice cream sundae sitting in the foreground. The camera tilts up to reveal a woman leering at the sundae. Psychotically leering. She has heavily lipstick-coated lips and a mouth full of enormous teeth. She then runs her tongue over her teeth. I think she's supposed to be licking her lips, but she can't get to her lips because of those enormous teeth. I can almost hear the director on this one. Okay, that was good, but can you go bigger? We need something bigger here. Bigger became borderline psychotic. YouTube tracks the most popularly viewed areas of longer videos. This scene is one of the most viewed of this entire production.
Choices that can add a little freedom.
Cut to a pan of the gold frame signs over the various sections of the food bar. We move from hot appetizers to the Italian bar? These days, you probably know it as the pasta bar. In 1991, it was totally cool to use an entire nationality as a label for the undercooked noodles and watery sauce section of your buffet. We zip away from Italian bar over to dessert bar. Cut to another tiny hint at diversity. A black businessman in a suit is laughing at a table. His dining companions appear to be white, so it's nothing as radical as an entire black family in the dining room. But this one guy seems to be enjoying himself. Wow, we are building to a mountaintop in this song.
Sizzler is the choice of America.
A kid returns to the table with a huge sundae and a couple of watermelon slices. I guess they needed to balance the ice cream with healthy food choices.
Sizzler gives you choices every day.
Pans of more happy diners, more beauty shots of food. We then cut to a shot of the big-toothed sundae woman. She's back at her table, and surprise, she's got a date. All these food choices seem to have made her a bit horny. She keeps kissing her companion at the table, and it's like a get-a-room level of kissing. He looks pretty self-conscious about it, but goes along because she's got the crazy eyes. Seriously, people, I don't ever want to see this kind of PDA as I'm stuffing my face at a buffet. Please, cut it out.
Wholesome American cooking.
A waiter guy who looks like he could be out canvassing for the Mormons steps into frame. He's holding a full plate of steak and potato.
Fresh fish.
Okay, sure, if you say so.
A variety of salads.
The salad bar looks like it's nothing but fruit, but it does look tasty.
Wonderful hot appetizers. Tantalizing combination platters.
There are some beauty shots of the food here. As a producer of these videos, I know how nice it is when you can pan across the things being mentioned in the voiceover. So often with these kinds of productions, a lot of what's being said isn't visual. That's how you wind up with shots of a guy throwing a frisbee to his dog. You need to have something on the screen at all times. Remember the pretty blonde waitress who visited the table a few moments ago? We get a close-up on her face as she puts on the biggest forced smile you can possibly imagine. We see both overloaded rows of teeth, top and bottom. We then get to the meat of this video. This isn't just about how great Sizzler is. It's about how Sizzler is ready to take us into the future.
Sizzler introduces a new kind of dining with two completely different dining experiences in one restaurant.
This was the advent of either order off the menu or order the food bar. The food bar would prove to be so popular, Sizzler started downgrading the quality of their steaks and other menu items. No need to keep the better stuff on hand if nobody's eating it. More beauty shots of the food on the food bar.
It's a restaurant within a restaurant.
Yeah, it's really more like a smorgasbord within a restaurant. There's a great shot here. As they're panning over the food bar, we zoom into a guy in a blue shirt. It might be Big Teeth's date. He's got his back to us, but when he turns, he realizes he's on camera. He breaks into a megawatt aw shucks smile and scurries out of the shot. It looks like we caught him at one of the happiest moments of his life, and he seems a bit embarrassed by it. Quick whip pan to a woman with short hair and a power suit. She's enjoying one of the delicious all-you-can-eat shrimp.
It's unique. It's bold. It's ahead of the competition. Sizzler for the 90s. Exactly what America wants.
Tons of all-you-can-eat food for one cheap price? I would agree, Sizzler. You have America's number on that one. The VO ends and we're back into the jingle. Warning, you might feel the urge to stand here.
Sizzler is the choice of America. Sizzler gives you choices every day.
Cut to a chisel-jawed guy in a blue suit petting his oh-so-cute dog. Was he the guy with the frisbee in the opening shot? Cut to the woman from the jogging couple earlier. Not sure what's up here, but I think it goes back to the need to show something all the time during one of these videos. The jogging woman with the short hair and the 80s headband we met earlier is now vigorously shaking her head back and forth. She has her eyes closed. She got sweaty while running, and the result of her head shake is a disgusting spray of sweat flying from her hair. She looks like a wet dog shaking off after swimming in a lake. No, she's not in the restaurant, but in my mind, this is not a very appetizing image. Yet, after flying sweat, we cut to another shot of the Italian bar. We've got 40 seconds left. Time to take it home with callbacks from the rest of the video. Cut back to a close-up of the African-American girl and her father on the merry-go-round. They're still not in the dining room, but they're having fun. Back to the kid with the sundae and watermelon slices. Like any kid who just sat down in front of a dish of ice cream, he grabs up a watermelon slice for a bite. Quick cut to the girls trying on the hats. A glimpse of the cowboy. Back to the sailor and his date, who is now snuggling up for a kiss. Back to young Terry Garr, still celebrating her hit. We're building. Our Mormon male server and too many teeth female server come together in an overblown closing shot. They look like a hairband posing for an album cover. A blurred light is between them. The background is blurred out. They're facing each other, heads turned to the camera. Big swell of music. And I have no idea what they said there. In case you are looking for a super weird cherry on top, oh, we've got that too. After the song ends, the screen dissolves to the Sizzler logo over black. Look at that font, refiners. It's in the Helvetica family right along with the Severance font. You could take Isler off that line and put Everance next to that big S pretty easily. an animated line underneath slides in buffet court in one color and grill in another color. This state-of-the-art 1991 animation is there to show us the two different sides of Sizzler. Two different states of existence? Interesting. Oh, and hold on, is one of those animated words in green and the other red? Well, of course they are. Then, after the logo has settled, we get this.
Sizzler.
Are you trying to scare us?
Sizzler.
So, very weird. Stan Beard said the whisper was most definitely not him. He doesn't even remember including it as part of the track. He thinks the
Sizzler
was added in by the video production company later. If you wait a couple of seconds after the closing board fades, the multi-image logo comes up on screen. And there you have it, Refiners, the 1991 Sizzler corporate video. It's a cult of personality. It's crazy corporate worship, and Dan Erickson happened to tap into it for a little inspiration as he was creating Severance. This relic of the early 90s has all the weird, devoted to the company kinds of overtones you could want. The whole thing feels about as phony as a music dance experience. I'm sure Jame Egan would love it. So that concludes the video, Refiners, but we're not done for today. Since we only had a 4-minute video to discuss, I thought I'd drop in a couple of other goodies for today's session. A few weeks ago, a Severance fan and podcast listener named Sharon Simon contacted me about being interviewed on the podcast. She wasn't on the crew or involved with the production of Severance in any way. In her first email, she told me she's a Severance superfan, she'd been inside the townhouse used for Mark's place in the show, and she wanted to be interviewed on the podcast. I enjoyed her enthusiasm, but this seemed a little thin for an interview. Then I thought, what the heck, it's not like I've got that much happening until season 2 drops. I figured, let's talk Severance. It's not like it's live. If it turns out to be nothing, I can always hit delete and pretend it never happened. Turns out it was fun. Sharon is also a stand-up comic, so she's not shy when it comes to talking. She is a SAG-AFTRA member, so she can't go to auditions anymore, but she can still perform live if she's doing material she wrote. She can also perform on podcasts because, well, she's not getting paid. So check it out, Refiners. Here's a fairly wide-ranging Severance discussion with superfan Sharon Simon. Oh, and don't go away because I've got another surprise for you. After we talk to Sharon.
Sharon, introduce yourself and tell me why we're talking today.
So my name is Sharon Simon. I'm a stand-up comedian and I love sci-fi and I love Severance so much that it's actually ruined television for me. And beside that, I've been lucky enough to actually be at Mark's house.
Now, when you say at Mark's house, you mean the character Mark S.
Correct. I am friends with the couple who rent their house out to the Severance crew so that they can tape there. So the outside of his house is a place in Nyack, New York, and I have been there. And I was there before the show started, before I realized that I was going to end up a diehard fan.
So did you know about the production before you knew anything about the show? Your friend said, hey, we're hosting this production company, or you'd heard about it before you knew what it was?
Yes. I did. He's actually got a house that gets rent out for other things. I should have looked at the list. I don't know offhand, but people often use his house. And I believe the Deuce might have used this house at one point as well. And this is the first time he rented it out for something science fiction. And I was so, so excited. I've been a science fiction fan since I was a little girl. A Philadelphia Experiment was the first time I enjoyed science fiction, which I think gives you an idea of how old I am. Up until the show Severance came out, in my opinion, Star Trek The Next Generation was the greatest show ever on television. And that's not to take anything away from it. It's older. It's very, very different. It's got a positive message about society and hopeful message about society. Obviously, Severance is very dystopian.
I have questions about the interior of the house. I know a lot of the basement scenes were shot in the York studios in the Bronx, that those were not actually in the location. How much of the upstairs is being shot in that house, or how much of that is set?
It might be mostly set. However, there are some scenes, like when he's by the window and where Cobell is looking out the window at him, like those look like what I saw. But I mean, her kitchen in particular, I can't imagine anybody would want to lend their house out to a crew where they make her kitchen look like that.
They definitely trashed it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then she trashes everything. Obviously, you'd be super excited. Patricia Arquette was in my home. But then in New York, you can't be that messy and not get roaches. Like, it's just not possible. They're everywhere. I feel like they're taking over. They're not afraid of us. They look at us like, hey, what are you going to do?
They're getting bigger and smarter, too.
They are. The other day, I looked at one and I was like, it's on. And he didn't even run away from me. Just set up and left. Yeah. Do you have any cookies for me? Because I'm hungry. I'm not leaving here. You're never going to catch me. We both know that. I live in your wall forever.
You mentioned also you have some severance material that you've been working on.
Yeah, I've been working on some jokes. Like, and I have found that I can't get my friends to watch it. I don't know if they don't have Apple TV or that everything's split up. So you want to watch one show, you get one streaming service. You want to watch another show, you get another streaming service. And more they're creating new versions of the old stuff. So diehard Star Trek fan, I'm not upset there are more Star Trek, but I'm more interested in something new, and I think a lot of people aren't. So I have jokes I've written, and no one wants to hear them.
Well, hit me with one.
So what would happen if Mark actually went to the shop? He never goes to the shop. And to me, the shop is probably a dispensary. I would think that that would shut your mind off for work pretty easy, too. So also, he takes a red pill. The red pill is for truth, right? The red pill is always truth. But the blue pill gives you an erection, which could be a lot more fun than the truth. And so Mark goes on a couple of dates with a woman named Alexa, and things don't work out. But everyone knows all Alexa's good for is telling you what the weather is.
This is the weirdest way in the world to do material, isn't it?
It's absolutely weird. It's uncomfortable. It's weird. I'm a crowd work comic more than anything else, but I sit there and I watch it. And I
just know this is a hard way. I did a little bit of stand-up in the 90s and hosted at a comedy club for a couple of years, and I just know how bizarre it is. I had a boss at an ad agency once. I was doing an open mic night. He called me into his office. So imagine he's sitting behind the big desk. I'm standing there in his office. He said, "Do some of your act." I'm like, "What?" Yep. He goes, "Do some of your jokes. Yep. I want to hear some of your jokes." He said, "I'm coming to this thing tonight. If I'm going to be there, I want to hear some of your jokes." So one on one, I did like the first three or four jokes of my set, and I'm like, "This is not how you want to be consuming this material. This is not good."
No, but we do the best we can. You know, during the shutdown, we were all doing stand-up on Zoom because that's better than doing no stand-up at all.
Sure.
But it's absolutely awkward. And I'm always better on stage. I'm always better live with the audience reaction. And
so when did you discover Severance? Were you one of the hop on when it was first being downloaded, or did you come along to find it later?
I found it a little later just because of being busy with working and touring myself. But I found it. I put it on. I started watching just that opening sequence with Helly on the table before you meet Mark sobbing in the car, before any of that. And my husband walked in. He was like, "Hey, I want to watch this." I ended up playing that scene again for him. And then he fell asleep, so I didn't finish it. So I got into sort of this pattern of watching every episode a bunch of times as I went through. And regardless of that, listening to your podcast, I am blown away by how much I miss. I think I watched it 8 times and I still miss things that you caught.
Wow.
My way of shutting my brain off for work is getting very high. So I think maybe that's what happened.
I have a background in advertising and marketing, and I have just always watched TV differently than people watch TV, even going back to when I was a kid. That has kind of influenced this. But after I found it, and I found it late too, I came to it in the summer after it had come on. But my first thought when Mark got out of the car and was walking towards the Lumen building, I'm looking at that long shot going, "Where are they? What is that building?" And I stopped it and I'm looking that up going, "Where are they shooting?" Mm-hmm. And then I'm looking for a podcast to tell me that information. Where are they shooting this? Who's directing this? What's going on? And I could not find that. All I could find were podcasts saying, "Wasn't that great? Wasn't that amazing? Wow, that was cool." And I'm like, "Okay, yeah, it was, but give me some information. I want to hear some background. So it was kind of out of necessity that I started the podcast. I wanted that info. So I thought there have to be others out there as nuts as I am that want to hear that information.
Yeah, people like myself. Getting ready for today, I decided to watch like a bunch of conspiracy theory videos on YouTube, and none of them have real information like you do. Like, they have lots of theories that, having learned as much as I have at this point, I may or may not agree with, but then ones that are, I think, so out there, like that Rickon is in charge of Lumen, things like that.
Well, and some of them, I feel like I've written stuff over the years, and I know what it is when you're writing to make all the pieces fit. And sometimes right. They just don't. There are just things that you forget, or you don't address, or you didn't think about that. And I think a lot of people that are delving so deeply into, you know, these potential hidden theories and these, these conspiracies that lie underneath the surface, and they're drawing in all these things. I don't think the writers are that deeply into it. I really don't. They have created a very cool world and have done some amazing things. But I think some people have taken it to this next step with some of these wild, all-encompassing theories that I feel like this is not there. I mean, you may have pulled together all these pieces and made it look like it's there, but they didn't put that there. That was not there.
I agree 100%. And I feel like enjoy the story they're telling. Enjoy what they're showing us. Don't find something that isn't there. I happen to love the Rickon character as an artist. I know a lot of people that are just like him and his friends, and they nail it. There's, in my mind, no way he's anything other than what he appears to be.
Well, the first time we ever came on that, the very first dinner party in episode one, I just really thought this is a skewering of intellectual elite and, you know, this mollycoddled group that we have out there that have become so dumb, but they're in this very protected space where they can be that dumb and not get called out on it. And I feel like that's who we're looking at. Not, you know, there's so many swirling theories out there about, oh, they're all severed, or they're failed attempts at severance. And I just think maybe you're digging too deep, you know, that maybe these people are just there to be goofballs, and that's what they are. And oh, they're hilarious. Right.
And maybe a lot of viewers have never found themselves at a dinner party where they're looking around and everybody is that obnoxious, but I have so many times.
I had a friend, I've got a friend that he listens and, you know, critiques every week after a podcast episode, mm-hmm. and we were talking about that. He manages a university bookstore. He said, mm-hmm. I work with those people every single day. That's very definitely a group that I can identify with. I see them all the time.
My sister's a writer. She's a very good writer, but some of the women that she's brought around are like that. And, you know, comedians tend to be a rough bunch, but there's a lot of that within comedy too. I was just thinking we need to get you to the East Coast to have a tour of the places that are in Severance.
I would love to do that. I'm really very interested in that. And actually, this is not my first podcast. My wife and I did during the pandemic, we did a rewatch of all 90 episodes of the 1978 sitcom WKRP in Cincinnati. It's called,
oh, wow.
it's called the WKRP cast. After we got deeply enough into it and in the show, you know, the show shot out in Hollywood City and, you know, CBS Television City out in Hollywood. So, you know, it was nowhere near Cincinnati, but they had a guy on the ground in Cincinnati who was always shooting exteriors for them and sending them out to Los Angeles. And those are what they were using for the exteriors that you'd see in the show. And then they would reference neighborhoods, and they'd reference streets, and they'd reference businesses. And we finally decided we got to get to Cincinnati. So we did a long weekend in Cincinnati, and it turns out we had a bunch of listeners there who, one of them had a car service. He took us all over town. We met up with another one who was a historian for the Cincinnati Reds. He took us on a tour of the ballpark. And we just had a blast going over and, you know, seeing all these things that are referenced in the show. And I kind of feel the same way about Severance. It's like, there's a big tour there. I want to see the Lumen building.
Oh,
I want to see, you know, Mark's apartment and Herb's apartment and There's a lot to see.
Well, Mark and Irv are closer to each other than the Lumen building. That's like a separate separate drive. I think like maybe an hour from each other.
It's a couple hundred miles, I think, from as I find the different places, and there are reporter kinds of sites out there that are always giving locations when anytime a show is shooting somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I've been tracking them both season one and then also when they were shooting in season two and kind of plotting it on MapQuest and seeing where they are. And man, they log some miles. They definitely do some traveling to get those shots, but then make it feel like it's all in the same neighborhood, that all these places are right in here.
It feels more like the Hudson Valley than New Jersey. The whole area feels like the Hudson Valley for me. So have you been to the Hudson Valley?
No, have not.
Yeah. So hopefully you'll get to see it. And I can't stop thinking about the people who work at that facility and what that says about how they feel about their job, knowing that their facility is so dystopian looking. In order to get into one of the Severance fan groups, I had to answer the question who my favorite character was. And I think all the actors are absolutely amazing. And I came up with my favorite is actually the building. The building speaks volumes.
Do you know much of the history of that building? I kind of really got into it. I dug into it and I've read several articles about it. When it was built, it really was built to be a futuristic looking, you know, very forward thinking kind of structure. And it was the cradle of some amazing technology that, you know, we're using today was invented in that building. Mm-hmm. Radio astronomy was invented there. But then it went into disuse.
I know that from your podcast.
Yeah. It went into disuse and it sat empty for a long time. There was even talk of leveling it, of demolishing it. And a company came in about 2011 with this idea to make it this incubator. There's just so much space there. Instead of having one enormous company in the entire building, let's have a bunch of companies. And they even have apartments and living spaces and then these incubators for all these small companies. So it's really turned into something very different than what it was originally built to be. And it's kind of repurposing this enormous space, which could be this overpowering Orwellian looking kind of structure. Where instead, you know, it's now this kind of friendly, it's almost like a farmer's market with tech companies.
Gotcha. It's interesting that people live there at some point. That's one of the things we're waiting for with season two, is to find out about the people who never get to leave.
Yes.
And there were people working there who didn't leave.
You know, the reality of it, and I found, and I don't know if you've seen that video of the CGI work that they did. There are actually houses along those roads going up to the parking lot, and they take them out with the CGI. But there's actually a lot of residential right around that building that they've taken it out to make it look more isolated.
I hear about this, and I think about my life prior to getting to the point where I could be a full-time stand-up comic. And I can say, without a doubt, I have had jobs where if I had been given the opportunity to turn my brain off for the entire time and come back to, I definitely would have. In my case, the jobs that were the hardest for me were the ones where I was stuck in an office with no cross ventilation, no air, everybody stuffy. I feel for anyone who's doing that kind of work day in and day out.
And you know, I think a lot of people can identify with that. Is one of the reasons that it is so popular. And you know, Dan Erickson has said he was literally sitting in his car like Mark. He said he wasn't crying, but he was sitting there thinking, man, I wish I could shut my brain off for the next 8 hours. This is so mind-numbingly boring what I'm doing. He was working at like an overhead door company, just a functionary in the office, you know, go in, do the work. And he said it was just ripping his guts out. And so I think a lot of people identify with that and understand it. It's just nobody has ever been able to take these pieces of it and turn it into such a compelling story. Because his story is so much about business ethics and about, you know, what we're doing to ourselves when we work and overwork and we put in all, you know, the overtime. And there has been such mm-hmm. a a shift in the last couple of years because of the pandemic as to how people view work. Some of those elements that, you know, we look at in severance, that that was just the way the office was. Some of those things are changing for some people. There's not that I have to be in the cubicle every single day, 5 days a week. You know, I can be home 3 days a week and working, you know, off my back porch. So a lot of that has changed. And I think some of that has been fueled by this unrest that severance has kind of pointed out, this fact that we do spend a huge chunk of our waking lives under somebody else's direction, you know, and somebody else's care.
You know, I've had jobs where you would consider them way, way worse than working in an office, but working in an office for me was the worst. So the job I had right before I got to the point where I could be a full-time comic was working in mental health housing. So very mentally, I would go into the apartments of people that were very severely mentally ill, that were just coming off living on the streets, and I would help them sort of reacclimate to society as best they could. So I was thinking about that last night because some of the things I did were really uncomfortable, but I was still present because I was helping an actual human being in front of me. But as soon as I had to go back to the office, put in my notes, log everything, that part was just no fun. And I don't know if you'll find this interesting, but there are people who are forced to take medications that change their brains. It popped in my head and to bring that up to you because I thought you might find that interesting. Yeah, I wasn't sure if you already were aware of that, but I was thinking back to that time yesterday when I was looking through conspiracy theory videos.
You're talking about drugs that are being used by like a psychiatrist to change brain chemistry?
Yes. One particular case, and this was part of why I was getting ready to leave the job just as my comedy career was getting to a point where I could. But one of the worst things I ever did was I walked someone in to get a shot of medication that he really didn't want. So they gave it to him in a shot. So it had almost that feeling to it.
Of being hauled in to be severed?
Yes. Yeah. It popped in my head yesterday of that. That in a way, there are people who something like that is done to. And maybe in a lot of cases, it's for their own good. But who's to say that?
Yeah, anytime anyone's making those decisions for another person, it really calls into question, what's the motivation of the person making that decision? And is this really the best choice for the individual? That's the thing that makes the severance procedures so interesting as a storytelling device. Nobody's being forced to get severed. Everybody's doing it voluntarily. And then their innie realizes what a horrible mistake has been made, but the outie never really does. The outie is never negatively impacted by it. So it's really hard for them to see the perspective of the innie. It works really well for the outie. It's just this creation of this other entity that becomes a problem.
Absolutely. And then the entity is like an innocent child in so many ways. Being tormented. It hit me somewhere that no TV show has ever hit me. And there were so many nights where I was at a show, things were going great, but I could not wait to get home and watch Severance.
Yes, understand.
As an entertainer, I should be really, really upset about the strike. I'm so proud of SAG and AFTRA and the Writers Guild are doing everything that they should. We need to stand up for ourselves. But at the same time, it's delaying the season 2 with Severance, and that's really pissing me off.
Are you affected? Are you a member of either SAG or AFTRA? Are you affected or the WGA?
Yes. And so I'm not affected financially because my income is from live performance. That has not been altered. But I can't audition and I can't act. It's for me, it's not that big a deal. Really, the biggest aspect of it for me is the fact that season 2 is delayed.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to watch other things. People talk so highly of Silo, saying it's going to be so great. And it, you know, while we're waiting for season 2, I can't get through it. I think it's so boring in comparison.
You know, I watched it and I did finish it. I was interested in it more from the kind of the background of, you know, how Silo came to be. And, you know, the guy that originally wrote the books, it just kind of interested me. I like that kind of sci-fi, Stranger in a Strange Land kind of sci-fi. I got into it. I thought, you know, there were holes in the acting. There were holes in the writing. There were some holes in, you know, some logic things that didn't make sense to me. But I enjoyed it. I got into it. And it had a pretty good season finale cliffhanger. I was shocked to, in the very, very, very first episode, we get a big name like Rashida Jones.
Yep, and then they kill her, and I'm like,
Rashida, where'd she go? So, yeah, so it's kind of interesting, the way they've done that. But I felt like it's paid off. I mean, you know, I hate it when you get teased about something, and you don't get to it. It's like the waffle party, and I agree completely right. with Ben Stiller. He said, if you're going to bring up a waffle party, you damn well better have a waffle party. You better go to one. And that's ultimate. Because they initially, Erickson was saying, oh, we'll just mention it. We're not going to go. And Stiller's like, uh-uh, you got to go to the waffle party. Well, it's kind of the same thing with Silo. There are certain things that they talked about that they mentioned. It's like, ooh, I want to see that, or I want to go there. And they do. They go there. So that's been fun.
Maybe I should give it another chance. As I keep saying, I think Severance kind of ruined stuff for me. I should be, as a Star Trek fan, and I have a Star Trek podcast myself, and my friends don't even know this, so I am enjoying Strange New Worlds, but after watching Severance, it's just not as exciting.
You know, it's a beautifully constructed puzzle box, and as someone who has poked and prodded and pulled apart all bits of it, it's very well built. I mean, there are some places that, you know, they made some glaring errors, like the compunction statement count. I still get people sending me notes going, that can't be real, that can't be true. It's like, no, it is. There's no way she said it that many times that morning. She didn't have enough time. There's just no physical time to say it. And it's a kind of thing that writers don't have calculators sitting next to them in the writer's room. They just go, 1,000 times sounds cool. Yeah, make it an odd number. 1,072, that sounds good. They didn't think about, you know, how many times could you actually say it. It didn't come into their thought process at all. So there are little things like that. But for the most part, I mean, the puzzle box is very well made.
I'm curious if you have a favorite character.
I'm probably a Dylan fan. I think Dylan might be my guy. He was early on, just because I always liked the entertaining guy, the guy that's funny, that's, you know, the jokester. But then he went through such an arc between 1 and 9 to realize he's a dad, and to, you know, to be so selfless. This is the most selfish, narcissistic guy in the office. And at the end of it, to be the selfless one, to sacrifice himself and almost literally crucified on those switches, to make that arc, to go from me, 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 mine, 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 to I'm going to help all you guys, to the sacrifice of myself, was a huge character arc. And he pulled it off so believably.
I love listening to him and Herb in their side conversations.
And so much of that is ad lib. According to Haley, Dan's sister, the whole Muscle Show conversation was ad lib.
And it's such a great conversation. And it like points so much to them being kids, to the way people talk to each other in an office. It's just fantastic.
It's the sign of, you know, a couple of really talented performers, you know, great ad libbers, and people that are just into their character and completely understand, this is how my character would respond to this situation.
As I said, the building is my favorite character. Outside of that, I love John Turturro. He steals everything he does. He always lights up the screen. When he's like in awe in the perpetuity wing, when he's correcting Mark, it's just so, it's so sad and funny all at the same time.
I saw a comment too, and I forget where it was. I hang out on all the different threads where people are talking about this. And somebody said, I'm shocked at how moved and into I am the story about the aging gay men. I kind of agree. It's not something that, you know, I would have sought out as a storyline, but to watch those two, and I think a lot of it goes back to just the fact it's Christopher Walken and John Turturro. They're just such dynamite actors. They draw your eye. They draw you into their world, and they make it interesting for you to watch. And to have the two of them, it's like you're pulling for them. You're just so there, you know, in a situation that probably, you know, if somebody were to say, if I were to show you a couple hours of a story about two gay men, you know, finding love in their older years, would this be an interesting story to you? Most people are going to go, nah, probably not. But then when it shows up like that, it's like, wow, this is so compelling.
such a beautiful touch. The two of them in love is the romance no one ever knew they needed.
Yeah, exactly. And I love that. You know, they knew they wanted to go that way with these two characters, and they had not cast Bert yet. And they went to Totoro and said, you know, this is where we're going. This is who are you comfortable with? And he said, call Christopher Walken, see what he's doing. They're old friends. They know each other. And, you know, so I think that helps break down some of those barriers. But man, do they just light up the screen every time they're on.
I have a thing with romance, and a lot of my comedy is reflected in that. I think romance in general on TV and in film hurts people's ability to have real love because they see these dramatic efforts, and real love doesn't look like that. The actual most common phrase a lover says to another lover is "What's for dinner?" And that's so interesting to have him as the lover. That's what he asks.
Well, do you have any more, any topics, information, anything you want to cover?
No, I think this was fantastic. This was so much fun.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. And thanks for, you kind of came out of the blue and said, hey, I want to be on your show.
Your show is fantastic. So I'm honored to, I do a lot of podcasts for a lot of different things, but just talking shop about Severance is one of my favorite things to do. So this was really an honor.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I don't know what I'm going to do with this, but we'll do something with it.
Okay, cool.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. If you come out, let me know. I'd love to have you at a show, and I'd love to take you around and see all the stuff that we have here that's Severance related.
That would be cool. That might be like a fall or winter trip for us. We might do something like that.
Super, super.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you, Alan S.
Thanks again, Sharon. And hey, I did find some place to use that. As I was listening back to that interview, I was thinking, wow, what a lousy interviewer. Sharon said she had a podcast. Did I ask what it's called? No, of course not. It's called The Prime Time Directive. Make sure to check it out. Also, something I forgot to ask during our talk, have they been to the townhouse to shoot season 2 scenes yet? I sent a follow-up on email about that one. Sharon said, yes, the shoot for season 2 at Mark's townhouse happened before the walkout. So when the strike's over, at least that part of it is out of the way. Want to catch up with Sharon Simon? Make sure to check her website, Simon Says Laugh. You'll find contact info and appearance dates for Sharon. I've got one more little surprise for you today, Refiners. It's our own MLE, or Music Listening Experience. This one is a bit of a callback to a discussion I've had several times in my life. What constitutes art? What takes something from being just a good movie or a good TV show and elevates it to the level of art? Does it show us a new way to look at ourselves? Does art point out flaws in humanity? Or maybe art elevates and celebrates our finer aspects? I think good art can do some or all of these things, but something else I think it does is inspire. A truly great song or painting or even a TV show that has risen to the level of art has the power to stir something in another creative person and make them want to create. Is Severance art? Well, all signs point to yes. It's got us looking at our lives and our relationship to work. It's pointing out our flaws and celebrating the finer aspects of human nature. It's also proving to be inspirational. I was inspired to create a podcast. It got Sharon Simon writing jokes. There are a number of Severance-inspired paintings and sketches out there on fan sites. Severance also has another guy doing some very cool and creative stuff. Michael Orbit is a musically creative fellow who was bowled over by Severance. It made him want to make music. Michael sent me links to a couple of music tracks he's produced, both inspired by and based on Severance. Michael is a veteran music producer, and these tracks are very cool. The first one he calls Mark S. Here's a sample.
Every time you find yourself here, it's because you chose to come back. Freely.
The other track he sent me is one called Wellness Session.
What I'd like to do is share with you some facts about your Audi. Because your Audi is an exemplary person.
Michael's even created some fun videos using show clips to support each cut. These are both original tracks inspired by the music of Severance, and I think they could be on this soundtrack album right alongside Theodore Shapiro's stuff. If you want to hear the whole cut of each of these and watch the videos, do a search for Michael Orbit on YouTube, and that's Orbit, just like going around a planet. Want to drop Michael a note and tell him how cool these are? You can send that to michaelorbitdemos@gmail.com. I think that might do it for today, Refiners. We don't want to intrude on your Audi life, so it's probably time to knock off for the day. Oh, and as for a season two of Severance, there's still no good news anywhere about either the WGA or SAG-AFTRA strikes. Hang in there, Refiners, and keep thinking those positive thoughts. Strikes do end. I'm just certain that someday our precious Severance will return for a second season. Until then, I'll try to keep things humming down here on the Severed Floor with these origin stories. But for now, it's time to shut down that workstation, rinse out your coffee cup, and get out of here. Exit via the elevator, and remember to please stagger your exits.
You've been listening to Severed, the ultimate Severance podcast. Severed is written, produced, and hosted by Alan Stair.
Severed is not endorsed by Red Hour Productions, Endeavor Content, or Apple TV+. This podcast is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only.
Severance, the Severance logo, and all video and audio of Severance and Severance characters are registered trademarks of Red Hour, Endeavor Content, Apple TV+, or their respective copyright holders.
Please make sure to leave a 5-star rating and review for Severed at Apple Podcasts.